gave a small nod, thinking it over. What about a system nullification area? Karma is handled as part of the system, right? If you take an item out of the system's influence, will the karma remain attached? Chelsea's eyes went wide at my suggestion. She turned, running for a nearby locker. From the look of things, they had been so busy trying to fix machines that they hadn't had the chance to try to think about a fix for the overall problem. I watched her root around inside the locker for nearly a minute before she emerged with a small box.
Nora, how are the repairs on the sprinkler system?
Just finishing up, boss, she said, Chelsea nodding her head and running towards Nora, whose upper body was half buried in the ceiling. Once Nora came down, she opened the box to reveal a white gem and hit a switch. I could see a translucent barrier spreading out through the room, causing everything to quiet down briefly. When she hit the switch again, the barrier collapsed back in on herself.
Okay, test it out. Knock on the sprinkler, lightly.
Really? Nora gulped, leaning over and lightly tapping it with her multi-tool. There was a small drip of water, but nothing major.
It's not bursting?
Chelsea nodded her head at that before speaking carefully.
Of course not. James made it.
She jumped back as soon as she said those words, the pipe shattering less than a foot away from Nora's face and spraying her with water. Her arms flailed helplessly, waving her multi-tool to cancel the flow. Gulping, Chelsea activated the barrier again.
Okay, let's quickly get everything fixed. After that, we have to be careful not to attribute anything in the lab to James, whether verbally or in writing. We can't give him any form of credit, or whatever project is involved will immediately break down.
Nora turned, glaring at Chelsea as her body was drenched from head to toe, the flow of water finally dying down.
Did you really have to use me to test that theory?
Chelsea offered an apologetic smile.
Sorry, you were the only one working on a system that wouldn't be fatal, no matter how badly it malfunctioned. If one of the perfection chambers or even the divine forge went critical, the entire lab would go down.
Nora let out a grunt of acknowledgement.
I'm going to go dry off, she said,
descending her stepladder and marching away with wet plops of her feet. Chelsea and I had matching wry grins on our faces, while I focused on sending a message to her main self in the admin room. Can he use this to help himself?
Yes and no. Technically, he can. However, he already left, and he didn't take anything with him. If anyone tries to take it to him to help, they'll be infected by the karma along the way and may end up getting killed while looking for him. Even the greater Pantheon wouldn't dare to mess with this kind of karma easily. As for using this constantly while going to find him, that's even harder, because your energy is almost uncontrollable while in the negation barrier. That's the primary point of it to begin with. Don't even try to volunteer yourself, or I'm telling Tsubaki.
I winced, knowing fully well that if Tsubaki heard what was happening and that I was considering delivering it to James, she would try to do so before I had the chance.
Okay.
Hopefully it doesn't take too long for him to figure out his problem. Chapter 12. With James out of commission for the foreseeable future, there was bound to be a dip in the speed of developing technology within my world. Although we had long since caught up to the standard of technology James was used to, he was a naturally gifted inventor. It would be hard to replace him in the short term. How long am I going to have to skip ahead this time if I want to make up for this loss? I asked myself with furrowed brows, thinking back to my options. There were a few, to say the least. The simplest and most straightforward was, as I had considered, just fast-forwarding until after James had finished his recovery. However, there was also the chance that his intensely negative karma would cause a catastrophe in the meantime. I was doing all of this to avoid a catastrophe, so I wasn't really all that keen on provoking one without cause. The other options were to find a way to speed up his recovery without another wave of negative karma destroying everything, or find someone capable of taking his place until his return. For the former, I wasn't familiar enough with the karma system to come up with a foolproof method of solving James's problem.
I still wasn't even able to smite him and remake him as a companion, until Fior's advancement reached the floor his race was native to. If I tried to help him, I would only be making things worse in the long run. Thus, it came down to a matter of finding someone that could fill the role until he returned. I was prepared to ask the High Mother for help, as the Mitong were incredibly advanced and had access to technology that was well beyond that which James was capable of, in some fields, at least. However, when I remembered that, I also remembered another figure that had only just recently returned to the world. The head of research for the Gear was someone who had once attempted to destroy Deccan for resources. Recently, when I was going back through important history notes that Terra had marked for me, I saw that he had been revived. Terra had even used her incarnation to threaten him not to cause trouble for our races again. Still, he is someone that can casually create fourth-tier spell diagrams. As long as the threat he poses is neutralized, he could become a valuable asset. With that in mind, I sent a message to Tsubaki. Tsubaki, there's someone that I want you to visit. I think that it will be most effective if you personally go. Tsubaki stepped out of the gate that she had created, her feet touching an entirely metallic ground. Thick plumes of smoke rose throughout the skyline. Numerous factories, all hard at work, pumping out cogs and mechanical limbs. Her nine tails swished happily behind her, glad that her keeper had relied on her for this mission. At the same time, she understood why it was required for her to be the one to do this. There were, in fact, two reasons. First of all, Tsubaki was the one that had originally killed the head. In terms of intimidating the opposition, there was no better choice. Secondly, her domains made her uniquely suited for this negotiation. Remember, I cannot mention James's name, or there will be consequences. Tsubaki reminded herself of what her keeper had told her, hands crossed in front of herself as she walked along. Nearby, she could see several clockwork entities watching her, hesitating, unsure if she was a friend or foe. She could even sense them communicating, broadcasting her position. Tsubaki said nothing, simply walking through the factory city. Eventually, she felt the ground shaking beneath her and heard the dense sound of colossal steps approaching.
"What are you doing here, fox?" a booming voice asked, and Tsubaki turned to see a towering figure.
From the large number of domains she sensed, she was sure that this was the head. Defying all logic, this entity had more than 50 domains scattered throughout its body, each limb acting as a remotely controlled entity, rather than part of the same being. The true core was the head itself. "I have come at the behest of my keeper," Tsubaki said calmly, turning to fully face this towering figure.
"I have no business with your keeper," the head said, in a grumbling tone, though Tsubaki merely watched him calmly.
"Perhaps not yet. However, should you continue to have business with my keeper, there is a high likelihood that everything you are building here will be destroyed in the coming years." When she said that, the pressure released from the head grew exponentially, though Tsubaki merely tilted her head. Regardless of his dozens of domains, he had too few people acknowledging his existence to build up a bulk of divine power.
"You seek to threaten me, fox?"
"Not in the slightest. This doom will not be by the keeper's hand." Tsubaki kept that same level tone as she spoke, one hand coming up to tuck her hair behind her ear. "Rather, there is a looming threat to this very world. Without your assistance, it is quite likely that all life in the universe will be destroyed, including you and your recreation of your species."
The giant golem glared down at Tsubaki.
"And what is it that the oh-so-mighty keeper wants from me, that he sent his most trusted pet to deliver the message instead of coming to do so himself?"
Tsubaki's brow twitched faintly, clearing her throat. "I am the servant of my keeper, and it is in this service that I offer you a piece of advice. After she said that, light began to radiate from her body, crushing the adjacent buildings and shoving the giant golem to its knees. Her eyes had darkened, her expression fierce as she glared at the golem. "You may insult me however you wish. However, if you insult my keeper, I will simply remove you again and find an alternative for him. It would only take a thought for me to connect your divine circuits, triggering an eruption of power that can shatter this planet." Just as quickly as the pressure came, it faded away, and Tsubaki's expression turned calm once more as her light faded. The head was left to tremble, not detecting any falsehood in her words.
"Why is it that everyone that comes here threatens me?" he thought to himself, helplessly.
"Now, as for the business, it is one that is mutually beneficial. In doing this, you will allow your name to spread among the population, garnering respect and faith that will be useful in increasing your power. All that my keeper asks is that you aid in researching a specific field." The light in the golem's eyes changed when he heard that.
"You want me to research?" he asked,
as if thinking he had heard wrongly. He had assumed that Tsubaki was here to ask him to build some superweapon to fight their supposed adversary. Research was already the head's passion, the purpose of his creation. "That is correct. Your field of research will be defending the realm border from void incursion. If you agree, I will use my power to grant you all the necessary tools and capabilities." Looking at Tsubaki's calm face, the head didn't quite know how to answer.
"What are the odds of the world's destruction, should I refuse?"
"For races that are welcomed on the primary planets, there is a projected 98% chance that they will be able to evacuate enough people in time before the invasion. Additionally, the primary planets are given an additional layer of shielding from void incursion, which will weaken the power of any monster seeking to attack them. However, for this race, which is currently neither welcomed on a primary planet nor possesses the additional layer of shielding, there is an almost 100% chance that you will lose the vast majority of your population. The chance that your people will be entirely annihilated is as high as 70%. There was a sound of grinding gears from the golem's body.
"And if I agree?"
"That depends on your contributions. Should the defenses be raised high enough to completely protect the world from void incursion, there will naturally be no lingering threat to you or your people." After a long moment's pause, the head slowly rose back to his feet.
"Very well. Then I shall accept this request on behalf of the gear."
Tsubaki nodded her head, as if this conclusion was inevitable. "In that case, there is only one thing left to do." After she said that, her divinity surged again, though this time it was not in the form of a pressure. "I offer you a contract of service. Should you agree, you will have access to all of this world's knowledge for the purpose of defending against the void. In return, you will assist in the development of technologies for the allied worlds." As she spoke, silver lights began to flow out of her body, forming a large, scroll-like contract that hovered in front of the golem. "Should you attempt to willingly use this knowledge and the developed technologies to harm the allied worlds and their inhabitants, outside of defense of yourself and your kin, your core program and all stored copies will be forfeit. These are the terms, with your divinity as the seal." The head's eyes flashed, a powerful detection spell sweeping over the contract. It took only a few seconds for him to analyze its purpose. Should he infuse it with his divinity, it would form a binding pact. With this, he would immediately gain access to the internet that the allied worlds used and have full authorization to access detailed records for their research. But as she said, if he attempted to harm them, there was a dark power within the contract, one that he fully believed capable of wiping his program. Thankfully, he did not detect any hidden clauses or secret traps. Everything was exactly as Tsubaki had described. Remembering that he was already being threatened not to harm the allied worlds, this contract did not truly pose any additional risks to him. As such, he stretched out one giant hand, infusing his divinity into the contract. As he did, something clicked in his mind, a new connection forming that broke through the constraints of space. At a guess, this seemed to be a shielded void tunnel, allowing him to directly access the network. When he had recovered from his shock, he looked down to find that Tsubaki had already left. "Welcome back," I smiled, as I saw Tsubaki walking into the living room, carrying a large bowl of popcorn in her hand. One of her avatars must have informed her that we were sitting down to watch one of the many movies that we missed the release of over the last couple skips. "How did it go with the head?" Tsubaki offered a warm smile as she nodded her head, moving over to sit next to me on the couch. "As you expected, he signed the contract without any complications. I believe that he will begin working immediately." "You didn't mention you know who, right?" I asked in concern, causing Tsubaki to shake her head. "As you said, my keeper, doing so would only cause unnecessary harm. Thus, I relayed the facts to him as they were needed and allowed him to make an informed decision." Her smile grew even wider, leaning over slightly as she offered me the bowl. Realizing what she wanted, I chuckled, bringing my head up to lightly pat between her kitsune ears. Her body shuddered briefly, eyes going closed. Sitting on the other side of her, Dana snickered and shook her head.
"The movie's about to start, you two. Let's not make it another 20 years before we're able to see a new one."
I rolled my eyes, bringing my hand down to hold the bowl. Tsubaki looked at Dana with a faint pout, but straightened her posture now that she had received her reward for her mission. Chapter 13. After sitting down and watching a couple of movies with everyone, I became more determined to avoid such excessive usage of fast-forwarding after this coming match was over. Unless there was something that I critically needed to develop in order to have my world survive an attack, it was fine to let things slowly develop. I could save up system updates to just before I decided to fast-forward, do a big patch all at once, and then when it's done fast-forwarding, I would be ready to apply another update, if needed. For now, I had to train. The upcoming battle would be one that heavily took place within the void, and I was woefully unprepared for a protracted battle in the void, which was why I now stood in front of both Leowen and Tsubaki in one of the larger training rooms that Tubrak had created within Olympus. Leowen had a firm look on her face as she watched me, clearly not in the mood to play around at the moment. Honestly, I was thankful for that.
"Right now, I'm afraid that you wouldn't be able to survive in the void for more than an hour at a time, Dad," she said honestly. "There are a number of problems that arise when fighting in the void, so long as one is not a fallen god. Starting today, I'm going to work on training you to overcome these problems. Both of you." She turned her head to look at Tsubaki, who gave a small nod of acceptance. "The first problem lies in the fact that our powers originate from the worlds we use them in," Leowen explained, creating a simple magic circle above one of her hands. "In the void, the geometric magic system does not exist. You can only maintain its operation so long as you carry a trace of the information from the world whose powers you wish to use. This trace will be corroded the longer you remain in the void. Fallen gods are able to resist this corruption indefinitely, as am I, due to my void domain. However, normal people will lose their powers within 15 minutes of entering the void. Depending on their size and power, items can take up to half an hour if they are not properly shielded. Dad, you would last an hour only because of the strength of your divinity as the Keeper. When the battle comes, my incarnation will try to provide you with shielding against corrosion before the fight. But there will always be ways for a divine blessing to be negated. You need to be prepared to activate your own shielding. This will be the first step to allowing the two of you to survive a protracted void battle." "What do we have to do?" I asked in a firm tone, Leowen nodding when she noted my determination. "For now, I am going to emulate the void within this training room. This won't be the instant power of negation that some fallen gods employ, like that other invasion. This is an accelerated corrosion meant to catch the opponent off guard. Instead, what I'm going to do is simulate it as if you were simply leaving a world.
After saying that, Leowen stomped one foot on the ground, the world around us seeming to shatter. I found myself floating weightlessly in the black abyss, my eyes briefly widening. However, Leowen merely stood where she was, arms crossed in front of her chest. "I will give each of you 20 minutes to form a defense before I cancel this power. To do so, you have to sense the energy of the void while your powers persist. One of the first lessons you learn when training to be a fallen deity is that mana carries a faint connection to the void. Use this connection. Shape the void and guide it. Create a protective film around yourself to prevent the void from entering and corroding your body." Almost as soon as she finished speaking, I saw a black aura wrapping around Tsubaki. Leowen looked over, giving a small chuckle. "Chelsea taught you how to control void energy a long time ago. However, that is too much. You only need a thin film, or you will be needlessly wasting your mana while dividing your focus." As she spoke, I reached out with my world sight. This was a saint energy devoted entirely to detection, so it should be more than capable of detecting the essence of the void in order to help me control it. Or so I thought. Because I was focusing on such minute details, I had to use a very small amount of world sight. And I did indeed see tiny black and red specks of energy. The problem was that this energy automatically broke down any world sight that it came into contact with. The vision I obtained immediately became blurry, before going fully black. Gritting my teeth, I released pure mana this time, trying to manipulate the energy of the void as if it were natural energy. This worked, to a degree. I commanded the void energy to come wrap around my body, as Leowen said, but it instead surged into my body, making my eyes go wide in shock. Thankfully, Leowen was there, and this was only a false void. Otherwise, that likely would have caused explosive results. Still, Leowen looked at me with an approving smile. "Good start, Dad. Treating it like natural energy isn't entirely wrong. But if you want to do it like that, there is something that you need to remember. The void operates based on rules. When issuing the commands, you have to be careful to create ironclad rules to prevent any accidents like just now." Saying so, she pulled the energy of the fake void out of my body. In the best-case scenario, that failure just now would have deprived you of all of your power, wiping out the trace of the world whose power you wanted to wield. Try again. Gritting my teeth, I nodded my head. Now that I knew what to watch out for, I should have been able to do it on the second try. Create a 1 millimeter thin barrier around my body. The barrier must maintain a distance of 1 centimeter at all times. This was the command I sent to the void this time. And yet the results were exactly the same as before. My eyes widened as Leowen pulled the void out of me again, looking in my direction. "What rules did you set?" When I repeated my previous instructions, a helpless smile appeared on her face. "Space, and therefore distance, is a concept that applies to a world. Within the void, distance is purely based on your perception of events. Naturally, when you apply these terms to the void itself, it does not have the definition of these units of measurement." I glanced over at Tsubaki, who was focusing on reducing the size of her black aura. "In that case, what unit of measurement should I be using?" I asked, looking back at Leowen. "Units. Just units," Leowen answered with a smile. "Like all energy, the void can be separated into independent units of energy. However, these units can be big or small, and can self-propagate. This means that there is an infinite amount of energy within the void itself, because new units are born instantly to replace any consumed units." My brow furrowed, but I nodded my head, focusing again. This time I created a barrier of mana around my body. I imagined this barrier as a weak magnet, and the void energy as iron dust. Attach a layer of void to my mana barrier, no more than 3 units thick, and prevent any additional void energy from passing into the barrier. This time I could see a flickering black field wrapped around my body. Leowen nodded her head, but didn't say anything. In fact, I could already feel that this barrier wouldn't hold, and so immediately increased it to 10 units. As soon as I did so, the black field seemed to stabilize.
"Good. This is step one," she said, before looking over at Tsubaki. "How is it coming for you?"
Tsubaki's eyes were closed, her own barrier now extending 3 centimeters out in all directions, drastically smaller than her original field, but still hardly a film.
"I believe that I should have this technique mastered within a few minutes."
Leowen nodded her head, leaning back against nothing and letting her body simply hover in space. She wasn't in any rush, as Tsubaki had already created a barrier to repulse void energy, and now it was only a matter of refining it. It was hard to tell how long it took, as there was no concrete way of measuring time at the moment. However, from a guess, it took roughly 10 minutes for the dense armor to become a flexible film. Leowen nodded in satisfaction, pushing herself off from the same nothingness that she had been leaning against.
"Good. From now on, whenever we train in the void like this, the two of you must maintain this armor. My next question, how long have we been training?" she asked with a playful smile. My eyes went wide, able to understand that there was a hidden meaning in her words. However, it was Tsubaki that first spoke. "While the estimated duration would be as long as 16 minutes, this is an uncertainty. You purposely severed my connection with my avatars when coming here, after all. My assumption is that you have altered the flow of time around us?"
Leowen flashed a thumbs up to Tsubaki.
"That's right. Time, like space, is mostly a construct created with specific worlds. I use the word mostly because you can't travel into the past or future. The flow of one event to the next is locked, but the speed of this flow can be manipulated, just like how Dad set Lorik and Speaker to an accelerated flow. Currently, we have spent 3 seconds in the void. Unfortunately, standard time is synchronized to Dad's personally perceived time, so it's still been more than 12 minutes of standard time since we entered. Otherwise, this would be a good training cheat."
Tsubaki seemed to agree, nodding her head.
"Perhaps. Though, is there any significance behind that particular lesson?"
"Of course," Leowen smiled.
"Imagine the battle is fought on 3 fronts. 2 battlefields seem evenly balanced, while the third has a slight disadvantage. Wanting to quickly finish the fight and head to the 3rd battlefield as reinforcements, you focus on your enemy and exert all of your strength to win. However, by the time you defeat your foe, not only has the 3rd battle been lost, but the opponent from that battle has joined the other fight and already wiped out both of your allies. Although you may have only perceived a 5-second battle, your opponent interfered with your flow of time, stretching that 5 seconds into 1 hour. Plenty of time for both of the other battles to finish."
My eyes went wide once again, imagining such a scene. How can we defend against something like that? Clearly it wasn't a matter of creating a defensive barrier, as that barrier had altogether failed to stop this time dilation previously. Leowen's smile grew slightly wider as she answered.
"Points of reference. I said before that space was a matter of perspective. Time is the same way. When we arrived, I spent 2 seconds accelerating my activity speed to nearly 1,000 times normal. Although to you it looked like I was mostly standing still, the fluctuations of the void caught this acceleration in my energy flow and responded. Unless you focus wholly on an opponent, they can take the opportunity to resonate with the void while slowing down their own movements. As long as they maintain a consistent flow, you will be trapped in their time. However, if you allowed your perception to continue monitoring your allies during this fight, you would have an additional point of reference to prevent this manipulation. When we entered this void, both of you were wholly focused on me for this lesson, and neither of you spent those crucial seconds observing each other. If I had slowed my energy flow to a crawl instead of accelerating it, 20 minutes would have passed in the blink of an eye, and you would have been fully corroded by the void before you noticed anything wrong."
"That makes sense." I thought about it for a moment, before raising a question. "In that case, would we be able to have a device like a ticking clock, so we can subconsciously measure time by its rhythm?
Good answer, but not good enough,
Leowyn chuckled. You're right. Doing that would lock you into a standard flow of time, being whichever world you emerged from. However, this is also a crucial weakness.
To demonstrate, Leowyn calmly walked over to Tsubaki, patting her on the cheek. While Tsubaki was confused, Leowyn walked over to me, lightly tapping on my chest.
In under 1/100th of a second, I just killed both of you.
Tsubaki's head was blown off, and your chest was crushed. Both of your void barriers crumbled, and your divine core detonated after being flooded with the void.
Tsubaki's body shook, tail standing straight as she seemed to understand.
If we use an external device to subconsciously measure time, we won't be able to respond to an opponent's acceleration.
That's right, Leowyn confirmed readily. You must always be on guard against someone altering the flow of time in the void. If they are slowing themselves down, they want to buy their allies time and delay you. In this case, you have to maintain your normal time through these points of reference, allowing you to outpace your foe. If they are accelerating, you have to accelerate to match them.
How do we do that while maintaining the points of reference? I asked, in confusion, Leowyn offering a small smile before she explained.
Rather than getting caught up in your opponent's acceleration, you have to accelerate yourself to match. That's the main reason why I brought both of you here, to serve as each other's point of reference. You will be fighting two avatars of myself, who will irregularly accelerate or decelerate. While maintaining each other as a point of reference, you have to learn how to instantly deduce the change in my flow of time and adjust your own time to maintain an optimal flow of combat. Remember, it only took me 2 seconds to accelerate my energy by 1,000 times. If you take more than 1/10 of a second to catch up with your opponent, you lose.
Chapter 14. The training battle with Leowyn was intense, seems like an understatement. When she said that she was going to be forcing us to adjust to different flows of time, she was serious. In a training battle that seemed to last for hours, every few minutes one or both of the avatars she used to fight Tsubaki and myself would randomly change their flow of time, and we had to immediately adjust our own while never losing our perception of each other. In a way, I could see Dana being incredibly powerful in this regard because her domain could cut off an opponent's perception entirely. Once she did that, she would just have to accelerate her energy to the extreme and most enemies wouldn't be able to match her. Tsubaki similarly had the stealth domain to prevent people from spotting her, though she couldn't use that in this training exercise. The one time she tried to use it to take advantage of the situation, the avatar of Leowyn fighting me immediately slowed down. I didn't find out until afterwards because my perception of Tsubaki had been cut off. After we were done with the time training, the two avatars of Leowyn disappeared again, only her main incarnation left behind.
Okay, that's step one of your training done. For now. I want to repeat this training at least once every standard week until the invasion. That way we can make sure that those reactions are instinctive. Now that you've gotten the hang of adapting to your opponent's flow of time and creating a void barrier for yourself, I'm going to teach you the basic combat tactics that have been developed for fighting in the void. Naturally, these tactics are easier for a fallen god, but it's completely possible for a regular god to perform them. For instance, Tsubaki has already mastered this next step, so this is just for you, Dad.
Tsubaki blinked at that, tilting her head in confusion. To answer her questioning gaze, Leowyn held one hand out at her side, a black swirl of energy forming to create a longsword.
Ah, manifesting items from the void. That's right. I know you learned how to do this already. Though you find it easier to do simple items like staves that you can make as solid constructs of a single material. However, the method you learn to do so is specialized to work inside of a world, which forces the technique to become more complicated to draw in the raw void essence.
You should have an easier time of doing so when you are within the actual void. After saying so, Leowen turned to look at me again. This is just like when you created your void shield. Since you're practicing the method of treating the void as an alternative to natural energy, you can do the same here. Give a series of commands to the void energy to construct a simple iron longsword. We'll get to more advanced techniques once you can do that in under a second. I blinked, hesitating for a moment before asking, "You say that I'm using this method. What other methods are there?" I asked, wanting to make sure that I wasn't making this more complicated than it had to be. Leowen smiled at that. "The void is information. It is the source of all powers. Any method could work, so long as you believe that it should work. You believed that the void was similar to natural energy, so you became able to command it as such. There is one god who sometimes patrols the void, who shapes the void with his bare hands, molding it like clay." When I sent a questioning gaze to Tsubaki, she nodded her head. "I use imagination to resonate my will with the void. I imagine a weapon in my hand, and..." A black vortex formed above her palm, immediately turning into a curved dagger resting in her hand. Even Tsubaki seemed surprised by how easy it was. Leowen, meanwhile, seemed to catch what I was just starting to think, and shook her head towards me. "Don't feel like you have to use Tsubaki's method. Her idea of visualization isn't bad, but it will make it harder to do the more advanced steps. On the other hand, your method of issuing commands is suitable for the advanced steps, but has a higher requirement to get started." "Right," I closed my eyes, thinking. If copying Tsubaki's method wouldn't work, perhaps there was a way to merge the two ideas. I could create preset concepts in my mind via visualization, and then issue commands with those concepts. First, I imagined a sword, a straight blade with a sharp, pointed tip. The crossguard was kept simple, with the handle having a black wrapping to help with the grip. Finally, there was the pommel, which looked like a small steel lotus flower. In my mind, I defined this as a longsword, visualizing its total length as just over a meter long. "This must be why it's so much easier for fallen gods to fight in the void," I muttered internally, recalling that they could simply save void commands to use again in the future. Meanwhile, other people had to manually draft those commands each time they were used. Once I felt that the image and material of the longsword had solidified in my mind, I held out my right hand. Within my right hand, create the item predefined in my mind as longsword. I sent that thought out in an instant, and another black vortex appeared. The wrapping of the hilt felt light in my hand, and I opened my eyes to see the longsword as I had imagined it. "Very good, Dad," Leowen smiled, nodding her head. "Now, keep practicing like this. Like I said, you need to be able to summon a sword like this almost instantly." I pursed my lips, thinking. I couldn't save the command like a fallen god would. However, I could save the mental concept of a sword, thanks to my abilities as a scholar. That would save me the steps of visualizing it again in the future. First, though, there was something else that I wanted to try. It was, admittedly, a more complicated weapon, but also one that I was more familiar with. I just had to solve some innate problems that came with this particular weapon type. Closing my eyes once again, I focused on the weapon that I wanted to create. This time it took me roughly 10 minutes to create the item in my mind, as I had to adjust certain aspects. Then, when I sent out the command to the void, I felt the familiar grip of it resting in my palm. Leowen blinked, looking at the item.
Gun? I was going to warn you once you mastered the sword, but projectile weapons aren't very popular in void fights. They operate under preset rules, so the projectiles are pretty easy to dodge by simply adjusting your flow of time. I couldn't help but grin when I heard her critique. I thought that might be the case. I lifted my hand, the weapon feeling almost hot in my palm, and fired a bullet into the void. The gun did not produce any noticeable sound. Or rather, the sound came and went too fast for us to take note of it. Leowen quickly grasped what had happened. You accelerated just the time of the gun itself?
Yeah. I gave a small nod, looking down at the gun. The gun, I imagined, as well as its bullets, would be vibrating at a frequency 1,000 times faster than normal. If this were in a world instead of the void, it would most likely break apart as soon as it was made. But, like you said, this is the void. If you can accelerate your energy, why can't I accelerate my gun? Then, when I accelerate myself as well, the gun will get even faster by association.
Leowen blinked before letting out a light laugh.
Dad, you can't do this. You're skipping steps in the lesson.
When I looked at her in confusion, she had one hand on her stomach, holding in her laughter.
Setting advanced parameters for your weapon was going to be what I went over next.
Shaking her head, she grinned at the two of us.
All right. Since you can make that gun, keep practicing until you can make it as quickly as you can.
Tsubaki, since Dad skipped ahead, I'll go over what you need to know.
As I focused on training the speed at which I could create and dismiss the gun I had saved, Leowen spoke to Tsubaki.
Like you just heard, you can create weapons with complex effects. In Dad's case, he accelerated the time of the weapon. However, you can do all sorts of things. The example that I planned to use was a flame blade. Imagine that the weapon you created had a blade made of fire, yet was still as sharp as steel.
Tsubaki nodded her head, starting to focus. It didn't take long for her to create a weapon with a flaming blade, but it was obvious at a glance that it wasn't sharp. More like fire was just gushing out of the crossguard. With her brows furrowed, she dismissed the blade to try again.
Like I said, Dad's method works for more advanced concepts like this, but he is communicating directly with the void and issuing commands. With your method, you need to visualize everything you want your weapon to be capable of whenever you make it. This advice seemed to help her, as her second attempt looked more like a sword than a red blade, flames licking off of it.
Good. Now, something more complicated. Every swing of the sword directly doubles the intensity of its flames.
Tsubaki's eyes went wide, as if thinking how she could visualize that. She pursed her lips, dismissing her current weapon and taking her time to focus. Meanwhile, I overheard the talk and began to think about what effects I'd like to add to my gun. Tracking bullets weren't necessary because I had the homing effect from my martial intent. I focused on refining the image of the gun in my mind, adding a dial on the side with icons for ice, fire, poison, light, darkness, and chains. I imagined a scenario where the gun was fired in my mind, each setting on the dial releasing a different type of bullet when it was pressed. Once again, I created the gun once I had the mental profile for it saved in my mind. I had been practicing rapidly creating items already, so now that I had this, it was easy for me to continue to do so. Of course, after creating it, I had to test each of the different bullet types. Leowen looked over, offering a nod of approval when she saw the flaming bullet being fired from my gun. When she looked back at Tsubaki, the kitsune was clearly struggling. Most likely it was the idea of visualizing the intensity of the flames multiplying with every swing. For the first two or three doublings, it might not be so bad, but once it gets higher and higher...
Tsubaki, I spoke up, causing her eyes to open as she lost her train of thought.
Don't try to measure the intensity of each level in your mind. Just imprint the concept of doubling. You can do it.
Leowen blinked, as that seemed to go against how she had instructed Tsubaki previously. However, only a few seconds later, Tsubaki had created another red blade. With one swing, the embers on the blade grew. With another, the blade was completely wrapped in fire. On her third swing, the fire began to pour out around the blade.
Okay, seriously?
Leowen arched a brow, looking at Tsubaki. Tsubaki tilted her head.
My keeper said that it would work.
Leowen held up a finger, opening her mouth, as if trying to find the words.
You know, having such utter faith in someone makes teaching like this really hard,
Leowen complained in my mind, causing my lips to twitch.
Like you said, it's all about whether or not she believes it should work. Knowing her personality, if I tell her that I believe she can do something, she will go beyond any sense of reason to accomplish it. Which is really handy, since the void is precisely beyond any sense of reason.
Chapter 15. It was another 6 hours of practical combat training before Tsubaki and I were released by Leowen. During this time, she drilled into us the necessary ideas to keep in mind when fighting in the void. For instance, concepts such as always maintaining at least 2 points of reference, always maintaining your void barrier, and to never directly answer an opponent in a fight. After all, with the void relying so much on information, there are many powers capable of attacking someone for so much as answering a question. After she left, she made sure to let us know that she was setting an alarm for 1 standard week before our next training session. Subsequent sessions were not likely to be as long as this one, but more focused on ensuring that the lessons that she taught us became instinct. That said, I knew that I was not as adept at manipulating the void as a fallen deity. No amount of lessons like this would change that, because it was their innate gift. I am the equivalent of a mage mimicking the powers of a druid. However, although I may not be as good as a fallen deity, I had no doubt that I could still fight one. As long as I kept my defenses up properly and followed Leowen's lessons, there would be nothing stopping me from using my normal abilities in the battle. As long as that was the case, I was confident in being able to fight any existing fallen deity in my world. I get why Dana didn't need this lesson, but shouldn't Gerard and Lifra have been here? I asked Tsubaki after we left the training room. However, Tsubaki simply shook her head. Gerard is not primarily a combatant to begin with. His forte is in research, and his primary method of combat is by establishing a territory with layered enchantments that he can control. This is why Dana created him to manage the Sky Citadel in your absence. As for Lifra, Tsubaki gave a somewhat bitter smile. Lifra's adventures take her wherever she finds interesting. It would not surprise me in the slightest if she has already conducted a number of fights in the void. At the very least, she will have researched the subject for her novels. It's safe to say that she is fully capable of unleashing her power within the void. I could only give a grunt and nod at that. I had been in the void before, and even briefly fought there. However, my outings were always quick, and I had never had to stay long enough to worry about corrosion or special combat methods. I'm surprised you needed the training in that case. Tsubaki offered a small smile at my words. I have done minor combat in the void in the past. However, like yourself, I have never spent much time there. Whenever it was clear that a protracted battle would be required, I would always give the task to Dana. There was a reason that my keeper wished for her to become a fallen goddess, after all. That made me hesitate, before deciding to ask something that I had been thinking about for a while. Are you and the others trying to walk the path of an origin? I asked, causing Tsubaki to look over at me in surprise. All of you are finding saint energies to complement your domains, and you even completely recultivated your body in order to obtain the saint body. Tsubaki chuckled lightly, but shook her head. I admit, I am tempted. However, I do not believe that it is the goal of any of us to pursue this path. Rather, we are trying to temper ourselves as much as we can, while ensuring that the path remains open to us in the future. Tsubaki looked out through the window, gazing at the earth visible beyond the sky. In my belief, the moment that either myself or Lifra become an origin, we will no longer be your subordinate deity. After all, an origin is a higher level of life form than a god, so that relationship should be broken as a matter of course. It is for this reason that I am in no rush. In fact, based on the context clues available, I believe that I have a key clue to the final step required to become an origin.
When I heard that, I couldn't help but look over in surprise.
Really? You've figured something out? I asked, with wide eyes.
I believe so. According to the information I have received from Lady Terra and the others, an origin is only meant to be produced near the end of the fifth rank. Meanwhile, the method of entering the fifth rank is to be able to use the power of the inhabitants of your world to produce a fully customized world within the void. Am I correct so far, my keeper? After I nodded my head, Tsubaki continued. Using these two pieces of information, as well as the knowledge that the origin is formed by the trinity of God, saint, and fallen, I reached a certain conclusion. Once two of the three conditions are met, the only way to fulfill the third condition is by refining a special type of world within the void, and using that as your core for the final transformation. For example, someone missing the key component known as godhood could create a divine world within the void and then fuse with it to become an origin. Likewise, someone who is missing the component known as chaos can create a chaotic world to fuse with. According to this theory, it will be impossible to create a true origin without consuming the energy of an entire universe, using that as the foundation for their power. I lowered my head in thought, considering Tsubaki's words. That's certainly possible. We know that Terra's incarnation can't unleash the full power of an origin due to their improper fusion. Maybe the energy of the world is just to serve as a container for that power.
That is my belief as well, Tsubaki said in agreement. From what I know, people at our level shouldn't even be aware of the concept of an origin. We can only speculate because of the existence of Lady Terra's incarnation. Otherwise, we would be blissfully ignorant until years later. As things stand now, we can make the proper preparations. I gave another nod before hesitating.
Wait, but if a balance is needed from the three sides, wouldn't you need to create and fuse with three worlds?
Tsubaki hesitated at that. It's possible. There are two ways that could proceed. Either I must fuse with three separate worlds, like you say, or I must create a chaos world of three distinct attributes, letting them maintain a balance before I absorb the world. Personally, I believe that the former option is by far easier, which naturally means that it shall be the second. I couldn't help but crack a smile at that.
Probably. Like you said, it's too early to focus on that yet. As long as you have your goal in mind for the end.
Lifra gave a soft sigh, looking over her equipment once again. It had been over a decade since the battle with the boss monster, and she had completely swapped out her divine armor for a higher grade. This armor had even been personally forged by the god of crafts, Kyria Sauron. Of course, she wanted to get Tubrok to make it himself, but he refused. Some nonsense about her basically throwing away her armor in every fight and getting it damaged far too easily. Was it her fault that she only went after the biggest challenges she could find, where she had to push herself to the limit, walking a tightrope between life and death? Well, maybe it was. But still, the goddess of heroes needed the best equipment money couldn't buy.
Are you ready? Petra asked, smiling at Lifra. The two of them had grown close as friends over the years, often going out on adventures together. To Petra, it felt as if she finally had someone her own age to hang out with. Though she was far older than Lifra, she still felt like a child at heart. This was a sentiment that Lifra herself agreed with wholeheartedly.
Yep, should be all set. You gonna bring the others along for this, or just the two of us?
The two were standing before the gate leading to the 60th floor of Fior, an untouched land. Petra giggled faintly, shaking her head as she lifted her massive black axe over her shoulder.
Just us this time. Thels is running a patrol with the others through the 55th floor. They think they might have found another new mineral there.
And they didn't bring us along for the fun?
Lifra's eyes went unnaturally wide before her cheeks puffed out.
Well,
We'll just have to enjoy this brave new world without them as payback.
Petra grinned at that, nodding her head.
That's right. Though, between exploring a new land and studying a shiny rock, I personally don't envy them.
There was a snicker from the slime as she agreed, walking over and placing her hand on the black wall to open the gate.
First order of business, finding the pillar for your magic gadget, or look around and see if there's anything cool?
Petra pursed her lips for a moment.
We should find the pillar first. The level orbs are an incredibly important resource in Fjord. We might even be able to open the gates up for higher-level adventurers from Earth and Deccan.
Maybe,
Lifra nodded her head, stepping into the gate. She took a couple of steps in, after which Petra saw her stop. Concerned, she followed in behind her.
Everything okay? Lifra.
Petra's words trailed off as she noticed the landscape of the floor. Clearly, this was another very unique situation. Although every floor typically had its quirks, there were only a few that were considered unique. For instance, the spectral landscape of the 54th floor, or the divine realm of the 39th. The 26th floor's crystal maze also counted.
This is going to take a while,
Lifra muttered, looking at the black pillars that seemed to connect all the way to the sky above. They formed hallways more than a dozen kilometers wide, and Lifra could identify multiple branching paths, as well as islands floating in the sky, seeming connected to these walls.
I should have called the others.
Petra shook her head. Thankfully, the floor was properly made of stone. Otherwise, they would have activated another gate the moment that they came in.
How are we going to find the gate to the 61st floor, though?
Lifra's eyes went wide in realization.
That's right! That magic gizmo only looks for the black stone gate. But they're all over the place here. We can't be expected to explore all of this, right?
Petra furrowed her brow, crouching down and placing a hand on the ground.
No. According to the normal formula, the overall radius of the 60th floor should reach as high as a trillion kilometers. We could spend thousands of years feeling along every wall at every elevation. As she spoke, her shadow began to spread out to cover the maze. Either there will be something special about the gate we need to take, or we'll need the help of the Greater Pantheon to pass this floor. Since her shadow was already spreading to envelop the floor, Petra stood up, glancing back before blinking.
Lifra, we might have a problem.
What? Did your shadow power fail?
Lifra asked in confusion, eyes trying to map out as much as she could of the territory.
Lifra, we have a big problem.
Petra's words caused Lifra to look back, seeing that the gate that they had come through had closed. Furthermore, it looked no different from the rest of the maze, just another section of the wall.
That's nothing.
Lifra rolled her eyes, walking back and following her footsteps.
We came through right here, silly.
She placed her hand on the wall, the portal opening. With a smile, she began to step through, only to jump back as soon as her head had passed.
Hey, Petra, I think we have a problem.
It shifted, right? Petra gulped, only for Lifra to nod her head. Petra thought that might have happened when she saw the smooth gate extending all the way to the sky.
This is bad. This is very, very bad.
If the destination shift along a set time frame, we can try to find a pattern and determine when the path to the adjacent floors will open at a certain spot. But if it randomizes every time a portal opens?
We need a way to keep a gate permanently open,
Lifra nodded her head. Worse, looking at the size of these gates, the odds of each portal opening leading to an adjacent room with each portal being randomized is less than a trillionth of a percent. We could spend our entire lives opening portals and never make it back. Lifra pursed her lips at Petra's speculation, seeing the portal she had opened closing. She walked over and opened it again. Sticking only her head through, she confirmed that the layout was different than she had seen previously.
Okay, nobody panic. I have a plan.
Really? What's your plan? Petra asked with a bitter smile, already planning to retreat to the void and indirectly visit the lower floors. She could warn Thelsa and get the shadows to scout out the maze. It would take a lot of time, but it was possible.
All we have to do is get back to the 59th floor. Then we just keep opening the portal from there, over and over again. If the destination is random, sooner or later we will get a position where we can see the mana pillar. After that, we can use your gizmo to create a map of the entire floor and create an exploration map based on that.
That's not actually a bad idea. Like with her plan for the scouting corps, it would take time, but it was far safer than exploring an unknown land with foot soldiers.
Right? Now we just need to get out of here, Lyphra said in a confident tone, reaching to the side and ripping at the air.
The air was torn, ripples flashing through it, but no void gate formed. Lyphra furrowed her brow, ripping again, this time with more force. However, again, the void gate didn't form.
The black stone walls might be suppressing void interference, Petra speculated. Do you have a way to pass a message to the outside? If I can get Thelsa to hold the gate open and send someone through, we can get back through our shadows.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a way, Lyphra said in a sullen tone, sitting down and crossing her legs on the floor. Give me a minute and I'll be back.
She closed her eyes, a golden ring of light gradually spreading out beneath her body. After roughly 30 seconds, she vanished, causing Petra's eyes to widen in shock. Chapter 16. Within the admin room, Lyphra emerged in the living room with a sullen expression. She was just looking forward to starting a grand new adventure, and she discovered that her first obstacle is a complete roadblock. According to Petra's estimation, they could have thousands of people all working together to try and create portals to the next floor. But there was every chance that it would take decades to just happen to get the gate that they wanted. How would that even work with planning the location for Gate's Rise and Gate's Rest on that floor? Since everywhere could be considered a gate, what would they have to do? When Lyphra looked around, she saw Aurevi sitting on the couch. She ran over, jumping to lay across Aurevi's lap while her arms and legs flail about.
Rivi! The newest floor of Fior was mean to me. Can you go beat it up?
Aurevi yelped, startled by the sudden slime girl flopped across her lap.
The floor was mean to you?
She blinked in confusion, grabbing the remote for the TV. When she flipped the channel, it brought up a map of the 60th floor, zoomed out.
Oh, wow.
Lyphra turned her head to look, pouting.
See, I wanted to go have a fun adventure, and then that happened. Beat it up for me, Rivi.
She pleaded, looking wide-eyed at the halfling goddess. The 60th floor wasn't entirely covered by the Blackstone maze. In fact, only 80% of the floor was covered, with the remaining 20% being centered around the mana pillar. Sadly, it didn't look like the gate heading up existed within this 20%. Aurevi simply chuckled.
You know I can't beat up a floor of Fior, Lyphra. Still, this is surprising.
She flipped back through recent history, reviewing the footage of their experiments.
And concerning.
Right?
Lyphra huffed indignantly.
Can you pass a message to Thelsa, then?
Petra said that if she holds the gate open and lets someone through, Petra can find them through their shadow connection.
Aurevi nodded her head, observing the map.
Yeah, and it looks like there's only one path that leads to the exit of the maze. You'll have to either get lucky to find it or open a gate on the outer wall.
As she said that, she was already transmitting the message to Thelsa, as requested.
Well, are there any monsters that we need to worry about? Petra and I didn't really see anything, but we weren't there long.
When Aurevi heard that question, she ran a search before shaking her head.
I'm not seeing any signs of life on the entire floor. Since anything this high up would have to be an energy-based life form, I guess that the black stone walls prevented the energy from condensing enough to form any kind of life. There's not even a boss monster to fight, Lifra groaned, her limbs sagging onto the couch and starting to liquefy. But I need an adventure.
Aravi simply rolled her eyes, a playful smirk at the corner of her lips. However, a moment later, her eyes widened.
Give me a minute. I'm going to try to make something for you.
Lifra turned over, looking up at Aravi with wide, blinking eyes. She didn't know what to expect and just saw a look of contemplation on Aravi's face. A few moments later, the scene on the television changed, showing a blue sphere resting on the ground in one of the many halls of the maze.
What's that? The level sphere?
I mean, we were going to look for that on our own, anyways.
Aravi snickered mischievously.
No, this is different. It's something special I just bought for the world. Once you put this in the central spire, you'll unlock the fast travel option for the world. Anyone will be able to open a gate from any Blackstone wall to any other Blackstone wall that they've visited in the past.
Lifra blinked again.
So, kind of like your priests?
However, the halfling goddess quickly denied that.
My priests aren't limited to only using the gates as their destination. That's something that I want to keep just for them. This is an add-on to the system rules for Fior, but it should help you navigate the maze more easily. Besides, although there aren't any monsters, there are other things to find on this floor.
Lifra immediately perked up, flipping herself over to sit upright in Aurevi's lap.
Can I have it? Pretty please? I'll write a special romance novel just for you and Julia.
Aravi had the decency to flush slightly.
I was planning to give it to you regardless. I'm sending it to Petra's location now, and Thelsa should be on her way.
Yay! Thanks, Rivi. You're the best.
Lifra lunged forward, wrapping her arms around Aravi and rubbing their heads together.
Afterwards, she jumped to her feet to return to Fior, where she found Petra looking at the blue crystal orb in confusion.
Aravi brought the level sphere to us already? I guess she doesn't want us to explore yet?
Petra asked with a faint sigh. We'll need to find a way to keep the gates open permanently. Otherwise, I guess we'll just have to write off this floor once we get a priest to the next one.
Nope! Lifra beamed, reaching down to pick up the orb. This is fast travel!
After saying so, she explained the effects of the orb that Aravi had created, causing Petra's eyes to widen. Of course, a look of contemplation appeared on her face a moment later.
That'll make it easier to move around, and also making getting in and out of the Shadow Guilds easier.
Lifra tilted her head at Petra's words.
Are people already using the Shadow Guilds again? She asked in confusion.
She thought that it would take at least 50 years before people began to rely on those spaces after the previous conflict.
Not as much as they used to, but they have come to the conclusion that it was an isolated event. For the moment, they're unwilling to put their most sensitive materials inside, but will keep a small branch open. Right now, they're more like black markets than anything else.
Ah! Either way, this will let us explore the maze as much as we want, and we'll never need to worry about not being able to get back home.
Lifra grinned happily, hugging the sphere against her chest. Petra simply chuckled, glancing around.
Right, but we'll need to be careful. We don't want to draw too much attention from anything that could be watching us.
She still remembered the crystal maze, where a native race was manipulating the maze to harm them.
Oh, that's not a problem. She said that there's no life on this floor. Something about the energy being disrupted by the walls. But there are other things. That means there has to be treasure. Special materials that even got her attention.
Petra blinked in confusion, slowly nodding her head. A second later, she glanced to the side.
Sora's here. Let's go. We'll come back after we turn that over to the central floor.
As soon as she said that, her shadow reached up to wrap around herself and Lifra, transporting them across the floor to appear before the dark-haired lightning mages, Sora Sparks.
Hey, Sora!
Lifra waved a hand, Sora chuckling and returning the wave.
We're here to break you kids out. Come on, let's not wait to get trapped again.
After Sora said that, she let the two hop back through the gate. Sora herself passing through a moment later. I sat at my desk,
watching the terminal flash with different windows. Tsubaki had established a connection for the head of research to work with the Deccan researchers, but I still made sure that she included a way to monitor that connection. We couldn't have him trying anything harmful behind our backs. Although both Terra and Tsubaki had taken steps to deter him, it wouldn't surprise me if he came up with a loophole that allowed him to survive. Thankfully, for the moment, he only appeared to be submitting schematics for a void barrier prototype after studying the existing technology. As I was looking through that, I felt Aurevi speak up in the back of my mind.
"Hey, Dale. Two things."
"What's up?" I blinked, sitting back in my chair to focus on my conversation with Aurevi. If she was getting in touch with me right now, there was probably something big going on.
"First off, did you get any kind of notification a minute ago? I bought a plug-in for Fior and wanted to see if you'd be alerted."
When she said that, I thought about it for a second before shaking my head. "No notification here. Everything good?"
"Yep. Just a fast travel system. Nothing major. I'll have Ashley run a thorough debug of Fior's system here soon, just to make sure that the plug-in didn't mess anything up. Other thing, there's